This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
A historical day as well. On the day in 1810, Miguel Hidalgo rallied residents in the town of Dolores to fight against Spanish colonial forces. Join us on Friday, September 15th from noon to 3 p.m. for a joyous celebration of music, culture, and more. Brought to you by KPFT's own Mr. Music Man, Gus Garza. We'll recognize the day known as El Grito de Dolores, the day Mexico rose up against oppression. This is KPFT Houston. The nomination period for KPFT elections candidates has begun and continues through September 25th. For more details on the election, how to declare yourself or nominate someone else as a candidate, and everything else, visit KPFT's website. That's www.kpft.org. KPFT unique model support, listener, and volunteer membership to our local station board. There will be separate but parallel elections for both listener and staff delegates to the Pacifica Foundation's 5 local station boards. Board members assist in fundraising, outreach, and governance at KPFT. Those form diverse communities in our signal area and are especially encouraged to run. Again, the nomination period is now open and closes on September 25th. Visit www.kpft.org for elections information, including nomination procedures. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Yes, it is Queer Voices, and it's Monday, August the 28th. And boy, things were a little different around this time last year.
Are you referring to Katrina?
What else?
Yes.
What else could I be referring to? And so far, so good. I mean, hopefully we won't be facing anything like that here in this area, although certainly the folks in Florida right now are concerned, and considering they're still recovering in New Orleans and the Mississippi Gulf Coast, you know, that's something that we can't forget. But here we are on Queer Voices, our version for tonight.
And who are you?
Well, I was going to say that.
Okay.
God, you're just so impatient. And I'm Deborah Bell.
I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
Yeah. And tonight, I'll be talking with Janet Baker about lesbians and breast cancer and the upcoming Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. And what do you have coming up tonight, JD?
In the second hour is Queer Music Heritage, and it's a special show, songs I've been meaning to play. And I've got a frog in my throat. I cover the waterfront of all music that's queer. And if you go to my website, queermusicheritage.com, there's a three-hour version of the same show with lots more that wouldn't fit sometimes for FCC reasons on tonight's show.
Uh-huh. So why was it that there are songs you've been meaning to play?
Because I do a lot of shows that are more or less theme shows. Like I might do interviews with artists, or I might do a show on bisexual music or transgender music or country music. And I have a lot of music in my collection that I think is interesting, but doesn't fit. Doesn't fit with those things. There's maybe one or two songs. They don't fit anywhere else. So, kind of a cats and dogs show. I think it's stuff that, if you don't like the song you're hearing, wait 3 minutes, it'll be something entirely different.
And, of course, we'll have This Way Out on, and I think tonight's edition is the one that includes audio files.
Yeah, but usually hits that way. Queer Music Heritage and the This Way Out episode with audio file very often hit the same week of the month. And we've got three new artists to tell you about in audio file.
Great. We'll also have community news, briefs, comments, and et cetera. So stay tuned. First, we'll go to News Wrap from This Way Out.
Marriage proposal, Australia's gayest justice, judges movement progress, and the personal is musical in this month's audio file. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 26, 2006. Marriage equality legislation will be introduced in South Africa's parliament within the next several days following the government's approval of a draft proposal this week. Parliament will essentially have 3 months to act. The nation's highest judicial body, the Constitutional Court, set a December 1st deadline last December when it ordered changes to the Marriage Act to correct provisions that discriminate against same-gender couples. The court also warned that if Parliament fails to meet the deadline, the Marriage Act will automatically be interpreted to include the gender-neutral words or spouse. Cabinet noted that this bill was likely to generate a lot of public debate, spokesperson Themba Masiko said, but at the end of the day, the decision of the Constitutional Court must be respected by everyone. There has been strong religious opposition to the measure. The country's conservative African Christian Democratic Party called for a constitutional amendment to protect traditional marriage, as they say. But the government quickly rejected that proposal. Whether through parliamentary action or the original Constitutional Court ruling, South Africa seems poised this year to become the first on the continent to extend full marriage rights to gay and lesbian couples.
South African Constitutional Court Judge Cato Regan said this week that the issue needs to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with urgently. She noted that people who cannot generally afford legal costs continue to be forced to file individual cases to establish their rights. One such case heard this week in the Constitutional Court involved the inheritance rights of a surviving same-gender partner when the deceased partner leaves no will. The Pretoria High Court ruled earlier this year that a section of the Intestate Succession Act is unconstitutional because it doesn't allow same-gender life partners to automatically inherit on the death of their intestate partners, as a legal spouse would. There was no word on when a ruling would be announced.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's House of Representatives is planning a public hearing on what international critics have called the most oppressive anti-queer legislation on the planet. The Act to Make Provisions for the Prohibition of Relationship Between Persons of the Same Sex imposes a mandatory 5-year prison sentence for anyone attempting to create homosexual marriages. It also criminalizes persons who witness, aid, or abet the ceremony of same-sex marriage, including priests or other clerics who would face the same prison term. The measure also bans any amorous public displays by same-gender couples, including hand-holding, the formation of any queer advocacy organizations, and adoption of children by lesbian or gay couples or individuals. The draft bill would also deny recognition in Nigeria of legal same-gender relationships contracted in foreign jurisdictions. Nigeria's Federal Executive Council earlier this year approved the legislation and sent it to the National Assembly for final approval. In announcing public hearings in his legislative body, the chairman of the House Committee on Human Rights said that the process of making laws should not be left exclusively to members of the National Assembly. Amnesty International says the proposed law contradicts fundamental freedoms under Nigeria's 1999 constitution and international and regional human rights laws to which Nigeria is a signatory. The European Parliament's Intergroup on Gay and Lesbian Rights has also condemned the legislation. However, it enjoys the strong support of Nigeria's Anglican Church. Infamously anti-queer Archbishop Peter Akinola issued a statement urging its passage, claiming, "The idea expressed in the bill is the moral position of Nigerians regarding human sexuality."
Gay activists in Uganda have condemned a list of alleged homosexuals in the country published in the Red Pepper tabloid newspaper. Gay sexual activity in the East African country is illegal and punishable by up to life in prison. There are no anti-discrimination laws protecting gay and lesbian people in Uganda. Yoweri Museveni, the country's president, recently pushed through a constitutional ban on same-gender marriage. Sexual Minorities Uganda called for the nation's citizens to stand up for human rights, saying in a statement that our brothers, whose names were published in the Red Pepper tabloid, are currently undergoing discomforts and are living under unbelievable fear of being arrested, ostracized by their families, or sacked from their jobs. Earlier this year, two tabloid newspaper editors in Cameroon were jailed after they printed a list of allegedly gay public figures.
Nepal's sexual minority communities want a voice in the new Charter of Rights being developed in their country, where homosexuality is currently punishable by up to 2 years in jail. Blue Diamond Society, the nation's most visible queer advocacy organization, is urging changes to laws that discriminate against LGBT people. They're also demanding representation in the elections that the government has promised to hold by next year to allow Nepal's people to choose between a monarchy and a republican form of government. Blue Diamond is also calling for other changes. Transgenders must be recognized in the citizenship card and other government certificates, the group says, not just as male and female. They're further demanding legal marriage or civil unions for couples regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, and that transgenders be given property rights. As if to underscore Blue Diamond's push for visibility, two gay men reportedly exchanged traditional garlands of marigold this week in what's believed to be the first public same-gender wedding in Nepal's capital, Kathmandu. Several guests, mostly queer activists, but also a few relatives, joined in the celebration, although there was no Hindu priest to conduct the ceremony. It remains to be seen if LGBT voices will be heard in Nepal's mostly feudal society, however, which condemns homosexuality. Gay men in particular have been routinely abused and raped, at times by the Himalayan country's own security forces.
But Stockholm's annual Pride Parade attracted a record 35,000 marchers, 71 floats, and 350,000 spectators on August 5th, according to police reports. It was led by men and women on motorcycles sporting rainbow flags and feather boas. However, in what police are calling a hate crime, three skinheads attacked a lesbian and two gay men near the park where the march concluded. One Pride celebrant was taken to a hospital. There were no reports about the condition of the victim or if there have been any arrests. In national politics, a parliamentary committee evaluating civil partnerships, legal in Sweden since 1995, called them outdated, according to a report by state broadcaster SVT this week. The committee said Parliament should legalize same-gender marriage next year and allow gay and lesbian couples to marry in churches.
An estimated 50,000 people, about one-sixth of the country's population, took part in the Pride Parade and Festival on August 11th and 12th in Reykjavik, Iceland. Iceland Review Online called the two-day celebration one of the major festivals of the summer. Providing more reason for lesbi-gay couples to celebrate, Iceland's parliament has modified the country's laws on registered cohabitation so that, except in name, same-gender couples receive all the rights of marriage, including adoption and assisted pregnancy. One local activist boasted, "As far as family law is concerned, all discrimination against gays and lesbians has now been removed in Iceland."
And finally, arguably the most famous location in modern queer history might be disappearing, according to a story this week in the New York Observer. The Stonewall Inn at 53 Christopher Street in New York City's Greenwich Village, the site of the 1969 riots widely credited with birthing the modern-day queer civil rights movement, could be fading into oblivion. Whether that's a good or bad thing depends on whom you talk to. Neighbors in the now ultra-gentrified village say that the Stonewall's traditional gay patrons have been pushed out in favor of a new urban, hip-hop, gangster clientele, and that noise and crime have become a serious problem. But the current regulars, mostly men of color, say they feel more at home at the Stonewall than at other clubs. "All the black clubs have been closing down," said one patron. "It's so comfortable here." "It's a hip-hop crowd," said another, "and I can just be myself here." The landmark hadn't even been a bar for nearly 20 years when it reopened in 1990, with promises by new owners to return the bar to its former glory. But David Carter, the author of Stonewall, The Riots That Sparked the Gay Revolution, told The Observer that they were mostly interested in exploiting the location's name. "In Stonewall's heyday," he added ironically, "you had underage hustlers, people selling drugs, and it was a really seedy place. Out of a fluke of fate, the Stonewall is probably closer now to what it was in 1969. Others charge the current owners with mismanagement and with abandoning the community by putting the Stonewall Inn up for sale. Dual Management, which owns the property, says it's keeping its options open as to what might become of the place. "And if it becomes a bar where gay patrons aren't welcome at all," writes The Observer's John Koblen, "the final nail will be driven through the casket." "And don't expect a Save Stonewall campaign," says one of the current co-owners. "We're famous all over the world, but no one in New York cares," he told The Observer. "The younger community doesn't even know what it is. The older community doesn't go out or care." We could have done more, lamented a bartender known only as Tree, who says he worked at the Stonewall Inn during its riotous past and works there now. We failed its history, he said.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 26, 2006, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Kareem Ferguson.
This is Queer Voices.
And I'm Deborah Bell with Janet Baker. We're here to talk tonight about the issue of lesbians and breast cancer. And Janet, why do lesbians get breast cancer?
Well, actually, I don't think that lesbians get it any more than straight women. I just think that the treatment that they choose is not always as aggressive as straight women. They delay getting the treatments that they need just because of the fear of the doctors and how they're going to treat them because they are lesbians.
Yeah, there's been, there were some studies done and some people that said that lesbians were three times as likely to develop breast cancer as non-lesbian women. But of course, these studies were done mainly where they could find lesbians, where they knew they were, which was mainly lesbian bars. And so there was some discussion about that it was a population that maybe drank more,
right,
maybe smoked more, didn't have children.
Right.
And if you look at what the risk factors of developing breast cancer are, the number one risk is if you're female.
Correct. And the older you get, the more likely.
That's the second,
right,
getting older. And not having children before the age of 30.
Correct.
However, a third of lesbians are women who gave birth.
Right.
At least a third. It may be higher than that.
Yeah, I think they need to reevaluate those statistics because so many of us do have kids now.
Yes. And, well, and we did, some of us came out after being in a heterosexual marriage, and you know, I had children at the age of 22 and 27, so, and of course, having children in order to be a preventative to not get breast cancer is not
kind of
really
radical.
The purpose to have the little darlings, but for you, breast cancer comes on a much more personal level, and so you've been involved now for like 5 years with the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation, and how did that come about?
Actually, when I moved to Houston, I've always done the Race for the Cure. I'm originally from Syracuse, New York. I did them up there. When I moved to Houston, I did the races, and I buried two of my sisters, one at 38 and one at 50, and I was just at one of the Komen events and decided it was time for me to do something a little more aggressive to try to help some other people.
And you lost them due to breast cancer.
They both died from breast cancer, yeah.
And then also your mother and grandmother?
My mother is still surviving. I have another sister that is a survivor of breast cancer also. And then my mother's grandmother and sister all died from breast cancer.
So there is a genetic factor for some people in developing breast cancer, although the majority of people that are diagnosed, in fact, don't have a hereditary component. But in your case, there is, what is it called, the
BRCA2 is the gene that my family carries.
Right.
And I have a 24-year-old daughter that has the gene also.
And so you had testing to show that you had the gene?
We did. In order to do the testing, they had to have some of my sisters that were still surviving that had the breast cancer. They tested their blood first and then drew the rest of ours and came. I went to MD Anderson and got the results.
Mm-hmm. So did you go in and have a prophylactic mastectomy?
I did not, actually. I had a hysterectomy, which the theory is that it's going to stop the cycles from, and that's what causes the gene to mutate into the cancer. I did not have the mastectomy because if I have the gene, I want it to go somewhere where they're going to find it sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. So do you do the monthly exam faithfully?
Yes, I do. I do, and I do, speaking for the Komen Foundation, and I do the health fairs and all that where we encourage women to do that and show them how to do it, hand out the shower cards. I do a lot of the gay and lesbian events. I was here for Pride and all that.
Tell people what the shower cards are.
The shower card is this really neat, like plastic-coated card that you hang up in your shower. It shows you how to do your self-breast exam if you're not sure. But it's also a punch-out, so every month you can punch out the hole just to remind yourself that you did it, because you should do it at the same time every month.
And there's a certain criteria that is suggested of the best time of your cycle to do it.
Right.
I think 5 days after.
After.
If you no longer have a period because
right.
you've had a hysterectomy or because you've gone through menopause, then you pick a day,
right.
like the first of the month, or maybe your birthday falls on the 16th, so you always do it on the 16th.
Correct.
For me, I do it when there's a full moon.
Okay.
That's my reminder because a full moon's like a breast.
I've never thought of it
yes.
that way, but yep.
Or you can have your partner do it for
right.
you and make it fun.
That's always fun.
And there are certain things that may make it easier. Some people are uncomfortable about touching their own bodies.
Right.
A lot of educators recommend that young girls, like when they enter puberty, are taught how to do it so that they get into the routine and don't feel weird about touching their own breast for a medical reason.
We do have a whole group of our Coleman Education that is geared towards high schools and teaching kids, the girls young, how to do it so they do feel more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing is for you to get to know your breasts and how they feel and to recognize
it. Get to know your breasts.
Absolutely. Somebody
and
should.
Your friends.
But you should look for dimples, lumps. It's not just a lump. You have to look for if your nipple inverts, if you have a dimple that wasn't there, if you have a bruise that you don't know why you got it. You know, all those things you really have to monitor. So it's not just a lump.
And are all lumps cancer?
All lumps are not cancerous. More than likely, it's not going to be, but you need to have it checked out either way. You can't, you know, run and hide when you find one. That's the longer that you put it off, the more likely, if it is cancer, that it's going to be more detrimental to you.
It could be a cyst or just a little fatty tumor.
It could be just a fibroid or anything.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean it doesn't need to be removed or dealt with. It just means that you don't have to panic right away and assume that it's cancer.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily require surgery. They do need a core biopsies where they just put the needle inside and draw the fluid out, and they can test it that way. So it's not even like you have to have surgery or anything to find it.
Now, how old should a woman be when she starts getting mammograms?
Mammograms right now, they're recommended is 40 years old.
Every year, once
a year,
turn
if you're 40.
40.
Unless you have a family history, then they start at 30 years old, and it's once a year.
Mm-hmm.
I go to MD Anderson every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just the average, it's like age 20, you should start doing yourself breast exams. You should have a clinical breast exam every 3 years.
Which means by a healthcare professional.
Right. And the most important thing is if you do go to your doctor and you don't feel like they're taking the time to do it or you don't feel like they're doing it right, you need to stop them and, you know, tell them to slow down or go to a different doctor that you feel comfortable with.
Or ask them, they should explain what they're doing as
correct.
They're doing it. And you can say, well, what does that mean? Why are you reaching there? Is
right.
that pressure enough? When I do my own exam, is that how I should do it? And that will help the doctor get a better idea of what to deal with. We unfortunately still have to educate the doctors.
Right. A lot of them just run through it because it's everyday practice for them, but you've got to let them know that you're as important as anybody else and they need to slow down and take care of you.
Mm-hmm. And are you familiar with the Lesbian Health Initiative?
I am.
And, you know, what their main purpose is to make sure that there is health care accessible to lesbians in the community, because one of the reasons that lesbians may not find breast cancer in a timely manner is because they lack access to health care. They don't have insurance because they're not carried on a partner's policy, or they don't have a partner and they have a job that doesn't afford them enough money to have insurance or whatnot. So there is the Lesbian Health Initiative, or LHI, has two health fairs a year where mammograms are provided, and we usually have them on Queer Voices, and a couple of months before the fair is when they start taking the bookings for the mammograms. And then if people aren't able to get it done at the health fair, they do give vouchers for the Rose, which is a facility that you can go to any time that can provide you with a mammogram at low or no cost.
The Rose is actually one of the grantees. We support them a lot with the Coleman Foundation. A lot of our money
right.
goes to them.
And, of course, just as you have been inspired by family members who've been lost to breast cancer, that's how the Susan G. Coleman Foundation came about.
That's
Nancy
correct. Nancy Brinker,
who's from Dallas.
Right.
did this in honor of her sister, Susan G. Komen, who died of breast cancer.
Correct.
And it is probably the best known breast cancer awareness organization in the country.
It is.
And it's one of the few that I'm aware of that really does a focus on the lesbian community,
mm-hmm.
to make sure, I mean, they've given grants. I worked under a grant at the Montrose Counseling Center. They've given money, I think, to LHI and to the Montrose Clinic. The Montrose Clinic has expanded services so that it's not only for STDs and HIV, but they do have where you can go in and get a well woman exam, a pelvic, and the doctor's prescription to get a mammogram. They don't do mammograms there, but they you can get checked out there.
I have been at their events and done the Komen education awareness there when they've had the mammograms and all that, and the mobiles. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people it's not finding something that's the worry.
Right.
It's there being something there and not finding it early enough.
Right.
Because cancer is very slow growing. And by the time it's large enough to be felt, it means it's been there a while.
Correct.
And if it's been there a while, the chances that it has metastasized elsewhere into the body, to the brain, to another organ, are much worse. And therefore, if you catch it early, the surgery is less invasive. And two, it's less likely to go somewhere in the body, which is going to be more dangerous.
Right. The 5-year survival rate is much higher if you act as soon as you find it rather than putting it off.
Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, noted people such as Melissa Etheridge, who, you know, she says it was like it was just there all of a sudden that she could see the lump. It wasn't that she felt it. It was something visible enough that, you know.
That would indicate that it was pretty big then if that's.
Yeah. And then there's people like Linda McCartney, who by. You know, a very wealthy woman, vegetarian,
mm-hmm.
Had children before the age of 30. I think she may have smoked. I don't know. I'm always a little perplexed by vegetarians that smoke. But, you know, there's no reason in the world that she should have died of breast cancer.
Right.
And so, you know, the prevention, education and prevention, just like with AIDS, it's the key. What do you think is the most important thing for people to know about breast cancer?
I think the most important thing to know is that 1 out of 8 women will get it during their lifetime right now is the statistics. The older you get, the more likely you are to get it. But the most important thing is if you find a lump, if you find a dimple, if your nipple inverts, you need to go and have it taken care of right away instead of putting it off or denying it or, you know, just thinking it's just nothing, don't worry about it. You can't just wait. You got to go and get it taken care of because that your survival rate depends on how quickly you get it taken care of.
And the two things I want to close off with is you started a special project of your own that is pretty unique. Pretty unique is not right. It's unique. You can't qualify the word unique. What is Pink in the Ink.
It's a program. I work for a printer repair company, and we also remanufacture laser toner cartridges. And in that, I found that there's a lot of them that we didn't use. So I started this program where we collect empty toner cartridges from a lot of big companies, actually in Houston now. It's expanded quite a bit. Started it in January of 2005. And we take the cartridges and we sell them off to other remanufacturers. All of the money goes to the Komen Foundation. We don't take any of the money. My boss lets me do it during my work schedule because I drive around all day. So since January of 2005, we raised $17,000 already.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So if you personally have ink cartridges that are empty, you can donate those. If you work for a company that has empty ink cartridges, you can get your company to donate them.
Right, and you can just email us and we come and pick them up because there's another gentleman that does repairs and we drive around all the time, so we go just about everywhere to pick them up.
And how do they get in touch with you in order to set that up?
You can actually go to the website. It's pinkintheink.com. And there's an email link down there.
Pinkintheink.com. And the other thing, of course, that we don't want to forget about is the annual, the 16th annual Race for the Cure will be in Houston on the 28th.
Nope, September 30th.
Oh. September 30th. I thought it was I had it in my head that it's
September 30th. It starts at 7:45 is the opening ceremonies.
That you corrected me because they had that clever little Gatorade bottle that they sent me that has the pink ribbon on it and the information. So tell me a little bit more about the Race for the Cure, where it's going to be, and how people can sign up.
It actually starts at Bagby and Clay and ends up in the Sam Houston Park off of Allen Parkway. And there's a 5K family walk. Then there's a 5K run for those that actually want to get up and run in the morning. Then there's the kids walk.
I can't know about those people.
Ain't me. And there's also actually a sleep-in for the Cure, too, where you can sign up and just stay home.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah, they give you the pillowcase and everything. It's all good. But if you want to sign up for it, it's you can just go to the Coleman-Houston.org website. And Coleman. You can sign up right online. Coleman-Houston.
.org. Yep. And, well, thank you for being with us tonight on Queer Voices. Janet Baker telling us about lesbians and breast cancer and the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure on September 30th.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Homosexual in every way, homosexual, oy vey, he's gay. Love those spandex shirts that cling to him. He'll let Michael Feinstein sing to him. Our sex life's a flop, but how that guy can shop. Homosexual, alas, I sigh. Homosexual, not even bi. Soon they'll say that gays can marry, though he would rather marry Gary. Still I love my homosexual guy. Homosexual, to show he'd care. With respectual, he'll tease my hair. Although sex is quite the hurdle, really does admire my girdle. We do not shake and bake unless you mean a cake. Homosexual, it's quiche, not pie. Homosexual, no lay, no lie. Jewelry. He wants Tom for real tomfoolery. Still, he is my homosexual guy.
Okay, JD. You're going to have to explain that one.
I think you'll find that song was unforgettable.
Yeah.
That was a comic from, I believe, San Francisco, Carla Gordon, from a CD, Don't Bring the Kids In. Most everything else on the CD we can't play on the radio. Before we lose the topic of breast cancer, I wanted to mention earlier this year I interviewed Lucy Blue Tremblay, and she's driving the country in a mobile van giving talks about the importance of breast exams, and she has a website set up called thebreastexamproject.org. Of course, www.thebreastexamproject.org. And she's produced a DVD that you can obtain that gives visual instructions on how to do the exam. So if you want to just learn in the privacy of your home and without... If you're too, you know, nervous or shy to ask someone how to do it, this could show you at home.
And I guess you could Google Lucy and breast exam and you'd eventually get to it, right?
Lucy Blue Tremblay. But thebreastexamproject.org is probably easier to remember.
All right.
Hello,
This is Queer Voices.
Always outspoken Australian High Court Justice Michael Kirby was stepping on toes again the past couple of weeks. Kirby, who was appointed to the court in 1996, told a group of Sydney law students on August 23rd that Australia's judicial system was lagging behind the rest of the world because of its failure to see domestic law in the context of international law. In a speech to queer activists just days before that, Kirby was critical of the homophobic religious right, but also chastised LGBT organizations for not cultivating stronger political ties and media presence. That all-important visibility was also on the judge's mind when he spoke at a Brisbane Pride forum called A Celebration of Achievements. Publicly gay since 1999, Justice Kirby was emphatic about the role of visibility in combating bigotry, but compassionate about the personal nature of each individual act of coming out.
We've reached quite an interesting time. From Galway in the west to Vladivostok in the east, there is no country that has criminal laws against gay people now. You don't get into the Council of Europe if you have such laws. And if you think that those laws began in the reign of Constantine, the emperor, back in, I think it was the 6th or 7th century, that's an awful long time, and it's an awfully big change. And of course it's spread elsewhere in the world, including in our own country. And it basically came about partly through civil libertarians standing up, through the actions of straight politicians. But then the most important thing for this began to occur, and you can see it here tonight. People had had enough. Enough is enough. People had decided that it was necessary to stand and be counted and say, this is how it is, get used to it, we're not going to change, we're not going to just disappear so that your illusions are comfortable. We're going to be here because this is just us. And if it's a problem, it's your problem. And it's an unscientific and an irrational problem. If only every homosexual person in our country were to make that stand, it would be astonishing. Because we all know that everywhere in Australia, homosexual people are. And in a sense, as I now realise, one takes part in one's own denigration by being secret about it so that others won't get upset about it. However, different people come different speeds in the journey. And it's not a matter of forcing people, unless they're hypocrites, on their own speed to reach their own point and take their own journey and accommodate their own family and their other situations. And the cruel things that people write and feel and think and say are partly the result of the fact that they just don't know. They just don't know. I'm so old that I remember white Australia. I remember growing up in white Australia. I remember that Australians hated Asians in my lifetime. Astonishing to say it. They had stereotypes about Asians. And why did that change in this country? It changed in part because of some very courageous politicians. They're the ones who changed it by their leadership. But mostly it changed because we began to meet Asian Australians. We began to know them as human beings. We began to know them as friends and brothers. We began to love them because they were like ourselves, and we knew that we shared humanity with them. And we were greatly blessed, not only by their presence, but by the fact that we ridded ourselves of that horrible hatred. And I think that is how the attitudes to homosexuals is going to change, in the same path. It won't change if the homosexuals are hidden from the straight community. It will only change when they know who gay people are, that they are everywhere, that they are doing worthwhile things, that they are good and bad, interesting and boring, that they are every variety in every level of society. They're in prisons and they're in the High Court, and they're doing their job, and they're citizens, and they pay their taxes, and they have their mortgages, and many of them, if they're lucky, have partners and their families and friends. And every time you are nasty and hate gay people, you are being nasty not just to them, but to their families, their brothers, their sisters, and all the others who know them and love them and respect them. I never go to any conference or any occasion now, but somehow I work in the fact of my sexuality. Not to intrude it inappropriately, but simply to introduce it and then to move on. Now, I am an office holder under the Constitution of Australia. In November, I will be the longest serving judge in this country. I'm greatly blessed by my partner of 37 years, Johan. He is not here tonight because he stayed in Sydney because he's an Ankali, and he looks after people in Sydney under that scheme, which is people living with HIV. But there it is. It's boring. It's ordinary. It's normal. We get on with life, and so do other people in this room. And the culture war is lost for the opponents of sexual minorities. It's lost because science is against them and rationality is against them. And it will change quite rapidly in Australia because I believe most of our fellow citizens are good people. And faced with reality, they change, as we have seen. And it will change elsewhere. And the enemies will remain for a while, but in the end, they will lose. But they'll lose more quickly if people stand up and say, this is it, get used to it, it's no big deal.
That was Australian High Court Justice Michael Kirby speaking at this year's Brisbane Pride. He was recorded by This Way Out correspondent John Frame.
Hi, I'm B.D. Wong. I'm the actor from Law & Order Special Victims Unit and Oz, and the author of Following Through the Electronic Adventures of the Chestnut Man, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Their current work could not be more personal, but the three solo artists featured in this month's audiophile are here because they succeed in touching something universal.
The second album by Colorado native Liz Clark is called Hand on the Stove. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile.
Don't you recognize the face of an old friend? I'm a girl creeping over every weekend.
Liz Clark's approach is to bare her soul, but also involve the listener.
I would say that this album is something that is deeply personal. there's definitely a lot of hope and a lot of optimism in there, but I also wanted to get out of my head and hope that I was accessible to other people and other people's feelings, hoping that other people could identify with it.
Who's your
Find out more about the album Hand on the Stove by Liz Clark at www.lizclarkmusic.com.
Brian Lane Green is a former soap opera star and Broadway actor, and his latest album is called Waiting for the Glaciers to Melt.
To live a life exquisitely, to bask in joy, to be the man predicted when I was just a little boy. To live a life exquisitely, a life sublime, be born, remembered, like a poem within a rhyme. Juxtapose a down spiral to an upward soar. I would rather choose a ladder to the sky, ignore revolving doors. I would rather choose joy like confetti falling on my face.
This is Brian's second solo album, and for this one, he gets personal.
My project's called Waiting for the Glaciers to Melt. It's an autobiographical journey, mine, in fact, and I'd never really written before, and all of a sudden, surprise, one day, I started writing, and things came out kind of intact. Anyway, it means a lot to me, and I hope it resonates with everybody else.
When losing turns into an icy block, have you ever seen a snowman's hawk? When the warm wind blows in, they say it frees the frozen. My days are numbered, and I.
You can learn more about Brian Lane Green's album, Waiting for the Glaciers to Melt, at www.brianlanegreen.com.
The debut album by Josh Zuckerman was called A Totally New Sensation.
And he's back to rock some more with his new CD, Out From Under.
Well, I guess you don't know.
Out From Under represents all that humans go through. It's a collection of thoughts and emotions put into 13 original songs. And these songs guard life and love and the pain we all go through, you know, being in a relationship as well as out of one. So if you've ever experienced love, or if you're looking for love, the CD is definitely for you.
You told me I was your man right down to the bitter end. How can you tell me all this without the feeling? I guess you're just like them all. You keep me climbing the wall, trying to figure you out. Oh, what a pity. Without you, man, I thought it was nothing. Without you, man, I thought I would die from a broken heart. Then I thought it would crumble from the words you said goodbye, but I'm coming out from under.
Find out more about the album Out From Under at www.joshzuckerman.com. That's www.joshzuckerman.com. audiofile.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiofile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiofile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiofile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Kareem Ferguson, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, John Frame, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT movie, music, and history CD thank you gifts. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, KEOS College Station, Texas, WRUV Burlington, Vermont, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
This is JD, and that was the Atomic Swindlers from their album Coming Out Electric with the track Intergalactic Lesbian Love Song. How'd you like that?
I'd like to have an intergalactic lesbian to love, or any kind of lesbian to
love. Okay.
What's the name of this group?
The Atomic Swindlers.
Okay. Well, J.D., did you watch the Emmy Awards?
No, I didn't, because I don't watch TV, so I don't know who anybody is.
Oh. Well, you know, award shows used to be kind of a fun, real...
When I was younger, I cared.
Yeah, and I don't know. I was really disappointed with the Academy Awards, and then the Emmy presentations was kind of a dud, but one of the highlights of the evening was when Leslie Jordan accepted, I don't know what category, but it was for his role on Will and Grace, and he said he'd be sleeping with his Emmy and that it was the only woman that he would ever have slept with. Which was pretty funny.
He's very funny. I saw him in a play in L.A. called A Southern Baptist Sissies, which they're making a movie of, so I'm sure he's in the movie again. And he was in Sordid Lives playing the drag queen.
Mm-hmm. It's a very short person.
Very short.
Vertically impaired.
Very short, sarcastic.
But funny. Very,
yes,
funny.
Very funny.
And, of course, I did enjoy Will and Grace, and we'll miss that program. But I don't know about the award show anymore. I was interested when they said that This Way Out is heard in College Station, Texas.
Well, I'm not surprised. It's heard 150 stations all over the world.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons is because the Princeton Review just came out with the best 361 colleges. And among the ways that they rank them includes how they stand as far as the GLBT population. And not surprisingly, Texas A&M and Baylor are in the top 10. Baylor did drop. It had been ranked, Texas A&M, Baylor and A&M were ranked 6th and 7th, respectively. And this year, Baylor was ranked number 3, so it went up, and then A&M remained in the number 7
spot. Baylor tried harder.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's interesting that they get This Way Out in College Station. And, of course, I'm sure many people listen to Queer Voices via the web at www.kpft.org. We have to say goodbye to another member of our community. We've been doing that on a fairly regular basis, it seems, over the last several weeks. And this time it's Gail Sweeney, who was a gay rights activist. She was involved in many events, the Dianas, Black Tie, Uncommon Legacy, the Victory Fund. And she was a good friend to many in the community. She had struggled with leukemia, and she was 70 years old, and she died on August 18th. They had a memorial service on Saturday in her honor.
And there's a nice feature on her in the Houston Voice, if
yes.
You care to look for more detail.
Yes. Now, what do you know about this Another Gay Movie?
I've been reading a lot about it, but I've not read a review yet from someone who's seen it, so I'm just waiting to see.
Well, it's coming up. Has it opened yet?
Yeah, it opened Friday.
It opened Friday.
I think it has all the class of Porky's.
Okay. Well, it's kind of a spoof movie.
Yes.
That was
the idea.
It's meant to be a spoof,
yes.
And it's just silly, and we need that sometimes.
Not meant to be clever.
We can just laugh at ourselves, and that'll be at the Angelica. So if anyone wants to see Another Gay Movie.
And there's a website by that name. You could go watch a trailer of it, which I've done. It's cute. Cute.
Yeah. Well, we will be having another show next week, even though it's Labor Day and a holiday for most people. The crew of Queer Voices will be here. David Elliott will be here with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Jennifer Renee has an interview with Kelly Smith about the Avatar program. And, of course, we'll have This Way Out music and more. Stay tuned after Queer Voices for World Village Cafe with Matthew Momo and crew at 10 p.m. and listen next Monday at 8 after Interchange with Larry Payne for more Queer Voices. And coming up next is
Queer Music Heritage with Songs I've Been Meaning to Play.
At At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
And when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gather around and started talking, that's when Billy would take me walking. In the backyard we'd go walking. Then he'd look into my eyes. Lord knows, to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. He was
what
he was.
What?
Ooh. Talking to me, come and tell me everything is alright. Kiss and tell me now everything is alright. Can we get away again tonight? The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Was in his eyes, stealing kisses from me on the side, taking time to make time, telling me he's all right, learning from each other's knowing, looking to see how much we've grown, and the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man, the only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT. I'm J.D. Doyle, and this show is called Queer Music Heritage. This month's show is, in a way, a continuation of my June show. It's another Songs I've Been Meaning to Play show. And on shows like that, well, you're likely to hear about any type of music from any decade. But every song will be very queer and, I hope, entertaining. We started off with Jeff Krasner's version of the Dusty Springfield song, Son of a Preacher Man. That's from his wonderful album from 1995 called Strong for You. And here's a couple more songs with a Dusty Springfield connection. For those of you who followed the charts in 1966, you couldn't have missed this next song. was Norma Tanega and her song Walking My Cat Named Dog. The song reached number 22 on the Billboard charts here, but was a much bigger hit in England, so she moved there for several years, and during that time had a relationship with Dusty Springfield, and wrote music with Dusty and Dusty's brother, Tom Springfield. And it's Tom Springfield who sings the next song. Now, I have no reason to believe Tom Springfield is gay, but I found this song by him that could be read that way. It's called Charlie, which I suppose could be either a male or female name. I'll let you decide.
Charlie, falling in love with you is easy. Sunrise, I see reflected in your smile. Charlie, you make my world so warm and pleasing. Everything is love when you are here with me. Charlie, I sit in joyful meditation, watching the moonbeams dancing in your hair, lost in your soft and gentle fascination. Everything is love when you are here. Charlie, until you came, I just pretended my life was such a cold and empty time. Each day began alone the way it ended. Quietly you came to me as in a dream. If I should ever leave you crying, my heart would never laugh again, I know. Living without your touch would be like dying. There will never be other arms for me. Charlie, stay with me. I need you so.
Now for some queer R&B. You wouldn't expect the Miracles to record a song about homosexuality. Well, they did in 1975 on their album City of Angels. That was 3 years after Smokey Robinson left the group. The song is called Ain't Nobody Straight in L.A.
remember exactly where I was when I first heard this next song. I was with my partner Jeff in a gay bar in San Antonio called El Jardin, at the time the oldest gay bar in that city. This was around 1998, and I was looking at their jukebox and saw a title I had not heard of that looked very queer, so I played it. It was called Bruiser LaRue, and it was by comedy duo Hudson and Landry, and I found out later was from their 1971 album, Losing Their Heads. And very queer it was. Meet Bruiser LaRue.
Hi, sports fans. Welcome to Ace Grobney Talks with the Superstars. Tonight's guest, the incredible fullback of the Steubenville Studs, Bruiser LaRue.
Hi, Ace. Oh, I love your cufflinks.
Bruiser, you were sensational last night.
Oh, Ace, that's so sweet of you to say that.
You rushed 253 yards, caught 4 touchdown passes, and picked up 3 fumbles.
And a sailor.
A sailor?
A mini. A seaman. Yo ho, blow the man down.
Hi, Bruiser, what do you enjoy most about football?
Piling on, Ace. Oh, I love it. Bodies here, bodies there, bodies everywhere.
Oh. Bruiser, football's dangerous. Can you think of one game that was actually fun?
Oh, I'll never forget it. We were playing an exhibition game in Argentina. It was against the Gay Caballeros.
The Gay Caballeros?
That's right.
Did you score?
Oh, well, great big silly you. Did I score? I ran myself right. Olay.
Bruiser, how about running down your career for us? How did it all begin?
Well, Ace, I started out playing kick the can in my mother's high heels.
Yes.
And then, of course, we went into grade school football, which was touch football.
Touch.
Which I dearly loved. Oh, if I knew then what I knew now.
Yes, yes.
And then we moved on to junior high. We used to call it junior varsity, which was really a blast because we had all the cheers and everything.
Ah, yes, the cheers. Can you remember some of those old high school cheers, Bruiser?
Oh, you bet. Ace, I'd be happy to do a couple for you. California Oranges, Texas Cactus. We play East High just for practice. And remember this one? Re, hit him on the knee. Rath, hit him on the other knee.
Yeah. You've got to be a football hero to get along with the beautiful girls.
Well, different strokes for different folks.
Well, out of all the games you've played, Bruiser... can you come up with what you consider your greatest play?
Oh, I certainly can. You know, all of us are prima donnas, Ace. And I remember my one play that I think was just fantastic, where, I'll never forget, we're playing against the Bradford Beavers.
The Bradford Beavers.
Right. And I took a handoff from our quarterback, Sid Talmadge.
Yes.
And I went racing around left end, and all at once, this huge beaver was staring me right in the face.
A Bradford Beaver.
Yes, ugly. Oh. And I stopped and I said, hi. Excuse me, are you a Libra? Big silly dummy was trying to think it over, and I just scooted around him and tippy-toed in for a touchdown.
Another great moment in sports.
During the 70s, Hudson and Landry released several more comedy albums and visited Bruiser a couple more times with titles like Bruiser LaRue Meets Count Dracula, but I'll spare you that one. This next selection is gay-related comedy, and it's from 1972. I don't know if the artist, Sandy Baron, was gay, but his album from that year got lots of attention in the gay press. And that's not surprising. It was called God Save the Queens. It was mostly good-natured comedy, and my favorite track was called Do You Take This Man?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here in the sight of God and in the presence of these witnesses to join together Peter Sanford and Barry Johnson in holy matrimony, which is an honorable estate instituted of God.
Doesn't Peter look simply stunning?
You know what they say about brides.
You know, of course, Peter made that gown himself.
Oh, I know. He is also an unbelievable cook. Barry's a lucky man.
He certainly is. Is Peter going to continue working at the magazine?
Oh, of course. He's made that quite clear. He's not cut out just to be a homemaker. His job's very important to him. Barry understands that. That's what went wrong with Peter's first marriage.
Oh, I know. Harold just wouldn't allow him to be her.
Mm-hmm. They decided to get married so quickly.
They had to.
Stop.
If any man can show just cause why Peter and Barry may not lawfully be joined together, let him now speak, or else hereafter forever hold his peace.
Reverend Perry, I have a reason.
Oh, Martin, don't.
Not here.
Let me handle this, Mother. Now, look, I'm the father of the bride. I mean, Peter's father. I hate to have to do this, but I tried to reason with Peter before it got to this point. Now, I'm no dummy, and I'm not a stick in the mud. I read the articles about this kind of marriage. I know the percentages and the statistics.
Father, please, I love Barry.
I'm sure you do, Peter. I'm sure he's a nice enough guy, and I've got nothing against him personally. But darn it, Peter, these black-white marriages just don't work.
Sandy Baron was Alan Cummings in the song Married. That was from a concert CD called Wed Rock, which was a benefit for the organization Freedom to Marry. Cummings, of course, is the Tony-winning star of the Broadway revival of Cabaret. And this CD also included Sandra Bernhardt, Margaret Cho, Lady Bunny, Lou Reed, Sleater-Kinney, La Tigra, and others. Up next is an artist from Atlanta who I discovered on the site MySpace.com, which I found to be a wonderful resource to discover new artists. His name is Barry Brandon, and this month he's releasing his debut CD called The Musical Theater Album. From it, I found this song by him quite appealing. Here's Barry Brandon and Taylor the Latte Boy.
There's a boy who works at Starbucks who is very inspirational. He is very inspirational because of many things. I come in at 8:11 and he smiles and says, "How are you?" When he smiles and says, "How are you?" I swear my heart grows wings. So today at 8:11, I decided I should meet him. I decided I should meet him in a proper, formal way. So today at 8:11, when he smiles and says, "How are you?" I said, "Fine, and my name's Barry." And he softly answered, "Hey." And I said, "My name is Barry, and thank you for the extra phone." And he said his name was Taylor, which provided the inspiration for this poem. My poem musical. He will like the fact it's musical because he plays guitar. And today at 8:11, Taylor told me he was playing with a band down in the village in the basement of a bar. And he smoothly flipped the lever to prepare my double latte, but for me he made it triple and he didn't think I knew. But I saw him flip the lever and for me made it triple, and I knew that triple latte meant that Taylor loved me too. I said, "Oh, what time are you playing? And thank you for the extra skim." And he said, "Keep the 355 because this triple latte was on him."
This next set of songs is very political, and I'm starting off with a track from a landmark album from Olivia Records. In 1977, that label released a various artist compilation of lesbian music, the first of that nature. It was called Lesbian Concentrate, and included works by Mae Christian, Teresa Trall, Linda Tillery, Sue Fink, and others, including a poet, Pat Parker. Her stirring reading was called For Straight Folks, and you'll hear her at the beginning sarcastically dedicated to Anita Bryant. And it'll be followed by a very new artist making her own political statement. But first, Pat Parker.
This last poem I will dedicate to our good sister Anita. It's called For the Straight Folks Who Don't Mind Gays But Wish They Weren't So Blatant. You know, some people got a lot of nerve. Sometimes I don't believe the things I see and hear. Have you met the woman who's shocked by two women kissing and in the same breath tells you that she's pregnant? But gays, shouldn't be blatant. Or this straight couple sits next to you in a movie and you can't hear the dialogue because of the sound effects. But gays shouldn't be blatant. And the woman in your office spends your whole lunch hour talking about her new bikini drawers and how much her husband likes them. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or the hip chick in your class, rattling a mile a minute while you're trying to get stoned in the john about the camping trip she took with her musician boyfriend. But gays shouldn't be blatant. You go in a public bathroom, and all over the walls, there's John loves Mary, Janice digs Richard, Pepe loves Dolores, etc. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or you go to an amusement park, and there's a tunnel of love, and pictures of straights painted on the front, and grinning couples coming in and out. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Fact is, blatant heterosexuals are all over the place. Supermarkets, movies, at work, in church, in books, on television, every day and night, every place, even in gay bars. And they want gay men and women to go hide in the closets. So to you straight folks, I say, sure, I'll go, if you go too, but I'm polite, so after you. Thank you.
I want a one-breasted president. Someone who lives in a high-risk category with nothing to lose. Someone not tied to a political party, a union, a corporation. A one-breasted president. Someone not tied to American corporate faith-based charities, American corporate money. I want a one-breasted warrior. I want her to tell us what to do with our oceans, our forests, our bodies. I'd like to hear her definition of mass destruction. A one-breasted warrior who would build a house that's not so white. A house built on bedrock. Not the cigarette butts and shotgun shells of the NRA, the FDA. I want her to stand up and say, Mr. Speaker, I will not be another statistic. I will not be put into a box marked some parts not included. Assembly is required. I want a menopausal pope. Someone who has bled and created life. I'd like to hear her thoughts on contraception, masturbation, Americanization, globalization, populations dying while we eat genetically engineered food, drink chemically treated water, and buy enough insurance to cover the medical bills. I want... Do you know what I had? I had a one-breasted mother. One breast, no uterus, and a yellow bloated liver. She was the incredible shrinking woman. Shrinking under her Bible, her husband, her mother. I needed her to wear her scars and go bald in public, not tied to a Bible, a husband, a mother who all silently agreed not to talk about it. He voted for Reagan while she baked cookies. You know, she never talked about it. She never talked about being sick. I wonder if she talked to God. She talked about God. She prayed. She prayed for people, over people. She went to prayer groups. But I wonder if she talked to her God, because she sure didn't talk to me. Now, it's 20 years later, and I'm living in a high-risk category with a president who lost, in a nation shrinking under its Bible, its media, its money, its omissions, its omissions, its admissions, its backrooms, its boardrooms, its payoffs, its police stations, its courtrooms, its blow it up, throw it away, suck it, dry politics. And what if one day, God, it could be right now. One tiny cell somewhere around my Texas, my Missouri or Illinois, yes, to the south or the west, decides to turn against me. And that little bastard cell starts dividing and multiplying, multiplying and dividing, growing and growing until they wheel me down that long hall, carve out my mountains, strip mine my fertile valleys, pump my streams full of toxic chemicals until my hair falls out and my skin turns yellow, until I don't want to live in this country. Inhabit this planet, this body anymore. And I wonder, will I stand up? Open my mouth? Or shrink under my fear?
Following Pat Parker was a spoken word performance artist who goes by the name Jen Ed, and the track One-Breasted President was from her 2005 album Exposed. I got to see her perform in New York City in June, and she was riveting. Remember on the old TV show, I Love Lucy, where Lucy always wanted to be on Ricky's show? Well, here's a guest announcer, my partner Jeff.
And this is a good time to remind you to visit JD's website. If you do so while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. He's always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more Very Queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night, Sunday morning, from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. This is really more difficult than I ever dreamed.
Thanks, Jeff. A star is born.
At the bar, there's a girl in the shadow, sitting still like a nun unknown. Though an attic full of strangers may hold many hidden dangers, there's a quality I like. She's alone. So I pause and I wink and I shudder, just to bring her attention in line. While her pastures may be greener, I can tell by her demeanor she's mine. That's fine. I need a good-natured, old-fashioned lesbian love story, the kind of tale my mama used to tell, where the girls were so sweet and the music would swell. That girl on the bed, how she wants me. She's a bee I could free from the hive. I would never dare deceive her. She's a very clever beaver with a quality I like. She's alive. So I pause and I twitch in the silence while I pray that she'll play out this hand. But I feel my intuition sing, notice her position, start the band. She's clearly mad. I planned a well-rendered, one-gendered lesbian love story with good old-fashioned sex in every line. Where girls with tattoos would whimper and whine. While on all fours you show me yours and I'll show you mine. I miss that soft-hearted, old-fashioned lesbian love story where women wrestle bears and passers-by. The kind of story so good that they won't tell in my hood. Do an old-fashioned tie line. I'm fortunate, I'm single, I'm busted with laughs. So why can't I be chucked into short paragraphs of a girl to mush? Choose from hundreds of blondes, but when shove comes to push, I understand the burden hands were two in the bush. Sweet Jesus! Let's hear that old-fashioned lesbian love story with girls and girls and boys stay out to sea. I'll write a new one and then I'll make them tell it again. Do an old-fashioned
was popular New York City cabaret artist Alex Corey. I don't think she's lesbian, but the song certainly was. It came from the off-Broadway show The Wild Party from 2000. It was called Old Fashioned Love Story. And here's a singer from the UK named David McAlmont. He's attracted attention there both as a solo artist and as a duo with Bernard Butler. And he got a lot of press in 1997 when he performed on television his cover version of the song Diamonds Are Forever, dressed like Shirley Bassey. His latest album from last year is called You Go to My Head, and I can't resist playing his rendition of Whitney Houston's song Saving All My Love for You.
A few stolen moments is all that we share. You've got your family and they need you there. Though I try to resist being last on your list, no other man's gonna do. So I'm saving all my love for you. It's not very easy living alone. My friends always tell me find a man of my own. Oh, but each time I try, I just break down and cry. 'Cause I'd rather be home. Gives you the right to be free. You said be patient, just wait a little longer. But that's just in the old fantasy. I've got to get ready. Just a few minutes more. Gonna get that old feeling when you walk through that door. 'Cause tonight is the night that I'm feeling alright. We'll be making love the whole night through. So I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving all my love for you.
That was just a little of one of the mega hits by the boy band NSYNC. That one was from 2000 and was called Bye Bye Bye. Of course you've heard by now that one of its members, Lance Bass, has come way out of the closet on the cover of People magazine. This next group is from Australia and is called The Mavises. From their 1996 album, Venus Returning, is the very catchy song, Do You Have a Brother?
are the brother. So you are the brother. So you are the brother.
One of Australia's treasures is queer playwright, songwriter, and performer Alex Harding, who for over 25 years has been contributing his own brand of gay musicals to the culture. A compilation CD called Just One More and Then I'll Go was released in 1996, covering his career, and from it I've chosen two tracks, The Wistful Perfect Stranger from his 1991 show Beauty and the Beat, and from 1978 from a show called Double Exposure is the bittersweet song There's Nothing Like a Fairy to Make Sure the Party's Gay.
I'd like a tall man or a short man, a soft man or a taut man. I'd like him black as night or maybe fair. He's got to feel, he's got to care. I'd like to touch you in the darkness, perfect stranger. Feel my heart cry tenderly that I love you, perfect stranger. That I love you touching me. I'd like a young man or an old man, a shy man or a bold man. I'd like him innocent or very wise, with lots of laughter in his eyes. I'd like to touch you in the darkness, perfect stranger. Feel my heart cry tenderly that I love you, perfect stranger. That I love you touching me. I'd like a gentle man or a rough man, an elegant or a tough man. He is mad about the way I smell. Completely safe and hot as hell. I'd like to touch you in the morning, perfect stranger. And you'll say, right on cue, that I'm your perfect, perfect stranger. And that you love me touching you. That I'm your perfect, perfect stranger. And that you love me touching you.
Think of my anticipation when I got the invitation, asking me to dine with Bob and Sue. Even though they're straight and narrow, even though they live in Harrow, I feel very flattered, it is true. Why should I feel so excited? I know why I was invited. We are having a party, and you'll come, we hope. We are baking a batch of vol-au-vents stuffed with dope.
The festival we're also having. Alex Harding. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's gay. He'll do his impersonations of old movie stars. He'll tell his sordid stories of the bars and bars. It's just as if you're listening to a man from Mars. There's nothing like a fairy to provide the cabaret. He's such a pepper-upper, but so alone, poor thing. And if he wants his supper, then he's gonna have to sing. RSVP by giving one of us a buzz. For now, though, I tell you, there's one hitch, because poor Alex won't be coming if my mother does. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's gay. See you at 7:30 when you get here, knock. If someone strange is at the door, don't get a shock. It's probably Alex camping in the au pair's frock. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's merry. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's gay. If you were to ask him, he might imitate Mae West, his Katharine Hepburn's killing. But the one that's best is his impersonation of the perfect guest. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's gay. Forget gay liberation. He thinks the subject's grim. He keeps his concentration on things that count to him. Whenever he comes, I serve baked beans and save the steak. He watches his weight, so there's no need to bake a cake. Whatever you can dish out, he'll be glad to take. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's merry. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's gay. There's nothing like a fairy to make the party merry. There's nothing like a fairy to make sure the party's gay.
Again, that was Alex Harding. Okay, here's one more comedy song by Lisa Koch and Peggy Platt, going by the name Dos Fallopia. In 1992, they recorded a very funny album called My Breasts Are Out of Control. And from it, here is one called A Camp Song.
We hope this next song will make you feel all warm and nostalgic. It's a camp song. Well, it used to be a camp song, but Lisa's totally rewritten it, so now it's a camp song. Get it? Camp. Okay, I'll just stop. We wear Birkenstocks, lesbian. We drive pickup trucks, lesbian. We've all got an aunt who's a lesbian. Oh, yes, lesbian. Brings back a flood of memories, doesn't it? Oh, yeah. We don't eat red meat except some of the time. Lesbian. We like pocket knives. Lesbian. We don't tip real well. Ooh. Lesbian. Oh, yes. Lesbian. Okay, now here's a special verse for all the non-lesbians out there.
That's me.
That's right. Even you men. Here we go. We wish we could be lesbians.
We wish we could be lesbians.
We join a softball team.
We join a softball team. Lesbians.
But we're not tough enough.
But we're not tough enough to be lesbians.
Bench warmer.
Bench warmer. Lesbian.
That's right. Let's modulate. We throw solstice parties, everybody.
We throw solstice parties. Lesbian.
We use power tools.
We use power tools. Lesbian.
We own dogs that are part wolf.
We own dogs that are part wolf. Lesbian. Oh, yes. Lesbian.
Down to the last song,
But before I get to it, I want to thank you all for tuning into the show. I always enjoy doing one of these shows, as I get to share so many songs I've been meaning to play. And my internet listeners get to hear a much expanded version, this time almost 3 hours, which includes many more songs, including some that, due to lyrical content, are just not ready for regular radio. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. And please check out my website, logically enough, at www.queermusicheritage.com, where you can see photos of the artists and recordings I've played tonight. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT Houston, and I'll be back on the fourth Monday of next month with another installment of Queer Music Heritage. I'm closing the show with the same artist who opened it, Jeff Krasner. Again, from his 1995 album, Strong for You, here's one that will grab you. It's called The Powers That Be.
Big mistake. Next week on Queer Voices, David Elliott from Washington, D.C. with Inside the Beltway and Beyond, the Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Jennifer Renee talks with Kelly Smith about peace and enlightenment through the Avatar program. Nationwide, many in the GLBT community are involved in the program. And, of course, there will be the calendar, commentary, news, and briefs, and This Way Out, and more music. So stay tuned now for World Village Cafe with Matthew Momo and his crew after this program, and listen next Monday at 8 p.m. with after Interchange with Larry Payne for more of Queer Voices. Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Polensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, on
the free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.